All right. Well, I have two handouts. Chris, will you hand out one? Barry, will you hand out the other one? Last week, we started talking about teaching kids about money. And I appreciated the input that some of you had, even though you have already raised your children, and we're engaged in this discussion. For those of you who like visual learning, I have a tree over here, and you can think about teaching kids kind of like this tree. And last week we talked about the fact that you break their will when they're very small. You teach them about Jesus and you pray for their salvation. And in reality, if you look at teaching your kids like a tree, that's the root, that's the foundation, that's what's below ground. Everything else comes from that and feeds that. And then last week we talked also about teaching your kids biblical truth and that you have to live and teach it without hypocrisy. And sometimes what keeps us from teaching biblical truth is that we don't want to live it if we're honest with ourselves. And then if the first time we try to teach it to our kids, because kids have this immediate radar to hypocrisy in their parents, and they tell you you're being hypocritical, you back off and say, okay, I guess I won't say anything about that again. Okay, so we do have to live without hypocrisy, and then we teach biblical truth to our kids. And that is the basis or the trunk of the tree. And it's from this that every other topic and area extends from. So on my beautiful drawing of a tree up here, I almost majored in art in college. That's the first lie of the day. These major branches are these major topics that we try to teach our kids. Things like your identity, who you really are in this world, and what your meaning is for your life. Ethics, how to act and behave towards others in this world. And then even a branch for work and money, the responsibilities you have in this world. And of course, all of these topics come from this trunk and these roots. Okay? And for me, being an ag guy, really simplistic in my thinking, okay, this helps me understand parenting. This is what you teach. This is how you teach kids. Okay, it is all based on this. Now, so then we get out here into the fine branches and the leaves, and then we're teaching about how to balance a checkbook and why you have a savings account and your tithe and so on. And that's out here. These individual topics are out here in the leaves. Now, one of the issues we have with modern education as a believer, as a Christian who believes in biblical truth, we have in some respects, we have an excellent education system in our country. But one of the issues with our public education is that they're out here teaching about the leaves, the individual leaves, in whatever topic it is, mathematics or grammar, English, okay, anything, history. But nowhere in that child's life are those leaves attached to a foundational understanding of all of life. And that's where, if you have kids at home, that's where you as parents, as believing parents, that's your role now. Because they're not going to get that at school. Now imagine a tree that still has all its leaves on. All right. Now imagine if you were able in your mind to Photoshop out all the branches and the major trunk all the way down to the ground. So now you have all these leaves there in the sky. Okay, what's going to happen when the first wind comes along? They scatter. They're not attached to anything. Okay? This is why our kids show such dissonance and such frustration and depression and anger. Okay? Because what they're learning is not attached to anything. They're learning all this stuff. But where's the fundamental? And that's your job as parents, to help your kids understand this. That every leaf that they learn about, okay, is attached and is filtered through all of this. It's really important to think about as parents and to understand. And money and possessions and resources are no different. Okay? So I know this isn't a parenting class. But nonetheless, it's really important to remind ourselves of these really fundamental considerations. Comments or questions before we move on? Okay, last week we looked at where you start with young children. Once you get out here into these branches, what do you start with in teaching them about money? And of course, we talked about delayed gratification, financial restraint. You don't have to expend all the resources that come your way. Associated with that, gifts of resources to others. And you have to show this by example through hospitality and generosity, that the resources you have, you are extending to others. And remember that a small child's first resource that they own is time. Before you ever give them an allowance, okay, the thing that they have besides a couple of toys in their bedroom, the thing that they have most precious is time. And if you allow a small child to totally consume this resource that they have, time, on themselves without ever making any impingement upon that as parents, they soon learn that pattern that what I have is totally mine. Okay? So one of the reasons that you never let the child set their own schedule, that you as a parent are in charge of their schedule, is so they start to understand some of these concepts right away through the use of time. That's the first resource that they own, that they will want to try to control as a two-year-old. No, I don't want to help take the garbage out. No, I don't want to help sweep the floor. No, I don't want to help set the table. I want to stay in my room and play, or I want to watch video games or something. That battle is about the first resource that a kid has, which is time. Okay? You have to make sure you control that. Because then when it comes to money, okay, they have that principle instilled that not all the resources that I have are mine to control for my own pleasure. Okay. Now, on the handout that you have, thank you. There was a book written in 1997 by Paul David Tripp called Age of Opportunity. It's a really excellent book about parenting teenagers. And I recommend it for any of you who are have kids at that stage and want to learn more about this. Some of what's on the front page here under the core mission in raising children comes from that book. And you have to start to work with your kids about what biblical convictions are. And that comes back to this issue here, that everything in life, every action, every attitude, every decision we make is based on or connected to the trunk of this tree, which is biblical truth. And even as small children, you need to start to talk about that. And then you start talking about these principles, which is what we call wisdom in Proverbs. But they're listed here, and this trip guy does a great job in the book of talking about this and relating it to children. And I have the book footnoted there for you on the first page of the notes in case you're interested in looking this book up. We have it at home. I don't know whether we have it in the church library. I forgot to look to see if we have it here. The other handout is actually a page copied from this book. And it just talks about all the things that teens are susceptible to and what kind of fruit you get in teens if they don't have these biblical convictions. And when you look down over this list here, you can easily see why it's really difficult to teach kids about money, or why teenagers make really stupid, immature decisions about money and resources if they don't have any biblical foundation. Okay. So this is also a really interesting 2 pages out of that book that I hope is helpful to you. Now, one of the concepts that's really important here, as you start to teach biblical truth to your kids, is that you're trying to make your home a God-centered home, not a child-centered home. There's a huge difference here. Okay? And in today's culture, the unbelieving culture says and rewards you for being a wonderful parent if your home is a child-centered home. They see you doing everything for your children, sacrificing your time and money and schedule for your child. And for that, you're labeled as being a good parent. Okay? Expending all your resources on the child so that the child has every opportunity to be involved in sports, to be involved in band, to be involved in the school play, to go to Europe with a group, to do all kinds of stuff. Okay? We have to really, that is so pervasive. And because we are naturally, as believers, responsible people, we can easily fall into that. And that's not where we need to be, people. Okay? We're not looking for the praise of men. We're trying to figure out how to order our homes in a way God wants us to. And a God-centered home is not a child-centered home. At least not a child-centered home in the way the world defines it. So part of this very core part of teaching is understanding the difference between these two. Okay? And again, what's one very practical difference between the two? Well, we have all been in this place where for weeks on end, what our kids are doing completely sets the schedule of our family. We've all been there. Okay, but that's not necessarily a God-centered home. Okay, that's a child-centered home. So, you know, this is one of the tensions of living in the world and still trying to pattern our lives as we think God would want us to. It's a big challenge. This is a big area of concern of me for the church, because I think we really fall into this. And as a result, our family life and even our marriages suffer because everything is sacrificed on the altar of what the child wants to do. Okay, now last week I promised you that I would read a little bit out of this article from the Wall Street Journal that I showed you last week. And for those of you who weren't here, the title of this article from page 7 of Monday, September 22nd, is The Best Ways to Bribe Children. Okay? And this talks about to the first sentence, to bribe or not to bribe. That is a question parents grapple with, and most end up giving in. Oh, really? In a survey released in July, 55% of parents said they gave their children bribes, including allowances and other forms of compensation to make them behave or to reward them for certain tasks or achievements. Most parents select the reward they think will best motivate their child. But experts say parents are missing an opportunity when they do that. Now, when I read that, I thought, oh, good. The experts are going to tell us what is wrong with these parents selecting rewards for their children. But here's what the experts say. Instead, experts recommend letting the child help to choose the reward. Oh, good. Another set of experts that just have rotten advice. Okay. This tactic has worked well for Anthony Cure, whose 7 and 9-year-old girls pick Beanie Boos and My Little Pony toys as their currency of choice. This father established pay rates easy enough for two girls to understand. 1 hour of work for certain responsibilities, such as sweeping the garage, equates to $5, which is roughly the price of a single toy. Oh, my golly. Okay. So much for the world's advice. Well, let's continue to build this, and we'll refer back to that a little bit. Number four is that you teach kids that God owns all your resources. So, you are the manager, not the owner. So their time is not their own. Their money is not their own. So you make them help with chores for no pay around the house. Children must work without compensation so that they understand that all of life is not some quid pro quo. We used to have a chart on our refrigerator, and we had those little magnet plastic letters, alphabet letters, and we had the letter for the first letter of each of our kids' names, and Shelley, being much more organized than I, had this all labeled out. And every day the kids got to shift their letter to the next block, and then we could look and see which kid was responsible to help with the barn chores, which kid was responsible to set the table, which child was responsible to help clean up after dinner, and which child was responsible to take the garbage out. Okay. And they did that with no expectation of having a reward. And this newspaper article talks about that what's really exciting for kids is, even though you give them an allowance to pay them for doing something, if they've done a really nice job, you go get them something special. And that really encourages them to continue to help to work hard at these events. Now, you know that if this is what's being written, we laugh about this, but if this is being written, this is a predominant view in culture, that this is how we should raise kids. And when these kids eventually get into the workforce, what's it going to be like to manage them? Tough. Okay. In addition to spelling out expectations and agreeing on rewards for specific jobs, surprise them once in a while with a special reward for good behavior on a continuing basis. Research on how the brain works shows that children react well to surprises. An unexpected trip to the aquarium or a local museum or another special experience can be very motivating to the child, says an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry. Oh, yeah. Science has shown that unexpected rewards encourage children. Sometimes when so-and-so's from a consulting firm is shopping with his 6 and 9-year-old boys, he purchases a toy they really want. It goes on. Enough of that. Okay. What's the next one? Well, when the kids finally get old enough, you start to help them make monetary decisions. Now, in our family, this is what we used an allowance for. So initially, we did not tie an allowance to work. We expected our children to work and to contribute to the cause of the family down here without any expectation of pay, because that's how it ought to be. But then we did give them an allowance to help them start to handle money and start to make very rudimentary financial decisions. Okay? But again, this was very structured. Okay? In our particular case, 10% was a tithe of what we gave them, 50% was savings, and 40% was theirs to decide how to spend. But out of this 40%, this was for themselves and for gifts. Okay? So with that pattern, you're reinforcing all of these things I've been saying we need to teach our kids. A tithe, a savings, and using resources for others. So that not everything that you give them is theirs to spend. All right? Number six, then, was finally you start teaching about work and reward. And you finally start tying money to actual work. This is above and beyond. This is when they get older, and this is above and beyond what we expect them to do down here, contributing to the family. Okay? Now, when they're small, when they worked, we paid them at the end of the day. So there was that immediate reinforcement of I work and I get paid. So when the kids were little and they were helping us pick raspberries and they were getting 20 cents a pint, if they picked 8 pints and they only ate 1 pint while they were picking, okay, they got paid at the end of the day, right away. Okay, now when the kids got older, of course, into their older teen years, then, you know, you stretch that out. You don't pay them at the end of the day. You pay them after 2 weeks, and they've kept a record and accumulated their hours of what they've done. Okay, so you, as they get older, you start to help push them into more mature attitudes. Okay, yes, you've worked, but, you know, you only get paid every 2 weeks or something like that. Okay. Another area that's very important to teach them about, then, as you start to really expand their horizons and start to teach them about the world, is you teach them information on marketing and advertising and merchandising and what it's like to live in America with all of this stuff. So now, I know for you women how hectic it is to go grocery shopping, especially when you have a bunch of little kids and you have the kids stuffed in the cart and you're trying to put all your groceries in the cart and you're trying to figure out what the best buy is and all this while all this is going on. But dads, you should be going along, okay? And then when you get to the cereal aisle, you take the older kids and you pull them away from mom, and while she's trying to actually make the important decisions about what to buy, and you say, hey, kids, look at this. Now, why do you think Fruit Loops is on this shelf right here? Why isn't Fruit Loops on this shelf up here? And you tell your kids about this so they start to understand how stores do merchandising. So that a kid who is 10 and 11 and 12 starts to understand this stuff. So that when they're 13 and 14 and they start getting all this peer pressure and they want to go to the mall and they want to do clothes shopping and everything, they start to have some of these concepts. They're a little bit inoculated to all this advertising that's focused on teens because you've started to teach them some of these concepts of how businesses try to attract you into their business. Okay, now I see some of you smiling like you think that's completely impossible to talk to kids about the placement of Fruit Loops or Honey Nut Cheerios while you're in the midst of grocery shopping. That's actually pretty cool. I always loved the grocery store. I know, you're looking at me like, Swartz, you are absolutely nuts. Okay, finally, you get to the point where your kids are old enough to start to understand concepts of finances. Okay? So you start to talk to them about saving, different types of savings instruments. You talk to them about how the stock market works. Okay? You talk to them about what really is the Federal Reserve System. And under our system, what is supposed to be the responsibilities of the Federal Reserve and what are supposed to be the responsibilities of Congress dealing with fiscal and monetary issues in our country. You talk to them about concepts. You teach them concepts about inflation and investing and about credit and the use of proper use of credit, things like that. Okay, by the time kids are 13 and 14 years old, you should be starting to engage them in these kind of concepts and continue that through their teen years. Comments or questions? Good point. Mm-hmm. And once again, you know, if you start right, if you start down here right, if you start here right, then when you get to the teenager or the 21-year-old who wants to get their first credit card, it's a lot easier to have those discussions because you've built the base of all of these considerations. Okay? It's harder. If you've never talked about this, if you've never built this connection, if you've not tried to teach your kids in all of this, and now the 21-year-old comes home and says, hey, I've applied for a credit card, and you say, well, have you checked what the annual fee is or the, well, no, but I think if I spend enough, I'll be able to get a free gun at Cabela's. Okay. I mean, you know, that's really exciting. It is to me, too, but, you know, it's just like Sorry, it doesn't work that way. Yes, Claudia. Okay, do you have any to recommend? Okay. Yep. It's true. Yep. Now, I may have mentioned before that those resources are good that are out there on the website and so on. But I do have an issue with them, in that they are very, what I consider them to be very sterile and very prescriptive. So that if someone goes to that material and they're motivated to make a budget or to get out of debt or whatever, those websites and that information gives them a very step-by-step type of information about how to go about this. How to get out of debt, what to pay first, how to set a budget, all those prescriptive things. And that's very typical of those books and those websites. They are helpful for someone who is motivated in that area. But one of the weaknesses I see in a lot of that material is they don't necessarily deal with our heart and with our motivations. And so, as I say, while they're helpful to someone who's motivated, someone who's not motivated, there's a whole lot of other stuff that needs talked about, which we're trying to do in this course, that are related to finances and impact finances, but aren't directly within that prescriptive thing of how you go about it. I hope you can see what I'm trying to say there. But that's a good point, Claudia. There is help out there for that. And with the web, we do have a lot of resources we didn't have before. And there's even stuff in our own library from those ministries as well. Other comments or questions? Well, some of you are in the situation where you may not have been a believer when your kids were young, or your kids were raised and moved out of the house before you got serious about your faith. And so now you're sitting here saying, well, I really would like to see my grandkids raised in this kind of environment. Some of your children are not believers. It's really hard to engage your children in these kind of thoughts and ideas when they're not believers. But certainly there's nothing wrong with trying to talk to your kids about this, even if they aren't believers. And certainly if you have grandchildren, while your motivation is to absolutely spoil rotten your grandchildren, okay, nonetheless, you can start to think about these kind of concepts for them as well. I was kidding Shelley about this, if we have grandkids come to the farm, I'm going to make them help and not pay for them. And you know what she said? You will not. She said, I want to see them. I said, they'll come back. They'll have such fun helping to haul manure. They'll be back every weekend. So there's a little bit of debate between Shelley and I as to how to teach financial concepts to our grandchildren. So. All right, any final comments or questions? Yeah. Yeah, you said that well, Kurtz. Yeah. You know, Doran constantly talks about the fact that the two biggest drivers of human behavior are fear and anger out of our sinful hearts. And merchandisers and marketers know that. Yeah. You have to buy this certain kind of shoe because you'll fear not being accepted. Or you want to buy my book on how to be successful in finances because the end's coming and the ceiling's going to fall in and you need to be prepared. And there are a whole lot of the marketing that we are faced with on a daily basis is trying to push your button of fear. And Kurtz just said it really well. We should be responding in every decision we make in our daily life out of what ought should we do being up under biblical authority. What is our responsibility under God? Not being motivated out of some fear that some marketer just pushed my button on. So, very good point. Very good. Anything else? Yes. Mm-hmm. That's apparently why we're talking about this topic for the next 6 months, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, next Sunday, we will be listening, Lord willing, to Charlie and Hurley Hannawalt for Sunday school. Just to give you a little insight into that, Charlie is a native of Lewistown. His family still lives up there. He's been with Wycliffe on the mission field in Indonesia for a lot of years. He and Randy Milligan go way back in time together when they were in mission activities together. During the tsunami relief on Sumatra, the big island of Indonesia. You all remember that terrible tsunami that occurred some years ago there. He met Hurley. Hurley is a native Indonesian lady who was working in international finance and insurance in Indonesia, but had become a believer. Her family is from a Christian village there. And So they were married a couple of years ago, and our church has recently taken them on for support. Charlie and Hurley's work are at the very tip of the spear, as we call it. They are linguists, and they go out to villages and try to figure out what the language is. Villages that have no written language. And that could be a village that has an animist religion, a Muslim religion, a Christian religion type thing that's being polluted or corrupted by animism. And they try to figure out what the languages are. So very, very interesting work that they're doing. So this next week at this time in Sunday school, they're going to share a little bit about the country of Indonesia. It's a country that we certainly need to know about, with the largest Muslim population in the world. And this real mixed up religious picture in that country. So I'm looking forward to their talk next week. All right, let's close in prayer.